with the World Bank, European Commission and the International Monetary Fund. The World Bank is represented by Mr. Kanaga Raya, lead economist on the World Bank's DPL loans. The European Commission is represented by Mr. Shekely, who is the country director for Romania, as well as Mr. Kuhlmann, who is the mission chief for Romania. The International Monetary Fund is represented by Mr. Franks, who is the mission chief for Romania, and myself, I am the IMF resident representative in Romania. First, Mr. Franks and Mr. Shekely will make some brief statements, then the panel will take your questions, and at the end of the press conference, press releases from the European Commission and the IMF will be available at the exit. Mr. Franks, the floor is yours.
Bună ziua și vă mulțumesc pentru prezența. În ultimele două săptămâni, misiunile FMI ale Comisiei Europene și ale Băncii Mondiale s-au aflat în România pentru a evalua progresele înregistrate în cadrul programului nostru multilateral pentru România. Aceasta este cea de a șasea evaluare a programului FMI și aprobarea acestei evaluări de către board ar debloca o tranșă de aproximativ 900 de milioane de euro de la FMI. Dați-mi voie să încep prin a spune că, la nivel de experți, am ajuns la un acord în ceea ce privește evaluarea. Rezultatele la zi au fost bune și am convenit asupra politicilor de se împun de la acest moment înainte, după ce conducerea FMI va aproba cele agreate și după ce condiționalitățile convenite vor fi implementate, vom putea să solicităm aprobarea bordului executiv al FMI la mijlocul lunii ianuarie, conform așteptărilor noastre. Permiteți-mi să dau colegului meu de la Comisia Europeană prilejul de a-și exprima declarațiile, urmând ca apoi să vă împărtășesc părerile mele mai în detaliu.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for coming to the press conference. As part of a joint European Commission IMF World Bank Financial Assistance Program, Romania has a 5 billion euro balance of payment facility program with the European Union. The current European Commission Services mission carried out the review necessary to disburse the forced installment of this loan amounting to 1.2 billion euros. Let me start with the bottom line. We concluded that if the specified actions we agreed with the authorities are overtaken, the conditions for this disbursement will be met. The actions to be taken that we discussed and agreed with the authorities are the adoption of the 2011 budget, with a budget deficit of 4.4% of GDP on cash basis and keeping the wage bill within the agreed 39 billion limit, excluding social security contribution for the army, the military personnel. Second is the adoption of a medium-term fiscal strategy, which is already in Parliament, which aims to bring the budget deficit down to 3% of GDP by 2012. And as part of the strategy, setting out the government strategy to create the room for the full utilization of the European funds, that is crucial to developing a modern road network, infrastructure, and lack of which is one of the major impediments to economic growth. The enactment of the Unified Wage Law, as discussed with the authorities, and the enactment of the revised pension law. Finally, the authorities also agreed to work with the Parliament to to ensure that Emergency Ordinance 50 of 2010 improves transparency and protects consumer rights, while also safeguarding the stability of the financial system, and that it will be full compliance with the EU directive. They will also ensure that the National Bank remains the only agency authorized to regulate banks' lending activity. Unlike in many European countries, Romania was very successful in preserving the stability of the financial sector. We think that this is one of the major strengths of the country. So looking forward, we regard the safeguarding of the financial stability as a key to the success of Romania. As to the economic outlook, we fully share the view of the other organizations involved in this mission, the IMF and the World Bank. So following the strong impact of the biggest recession in the world and in Europe since the Great Depression in the 30s, economic growth is about to turn positive, and we expect about 1.5% growth next year, and we expect inflation to gradually come down into the target range of the central bank. We are encouraged by the steady execution of the 2010 budget, which can bring budget deficit down to 7.3% of GDP in ESA term and 6.8% in cash terms. But resolute budget execution in the remainder of the year will be key to achieving this target. We also welcome the authorities' continued commitment to reducing the budget deficit below 3% in the long run and pursuing very ambitious structural reforms. And we strongly support the authorities' effort to significantly improve the utilization of European funds. And the 2011 budget will provide the necessary means to achieve this target. Finally, in the financial sector, the strengthening of the funding regime and the governance structure of the Deposit Guarantee Fund was an important step forward. There was, however, limited progress in the reduction of arrears in the state-owned enterprise sector and also in the local government level and the healthcare system. So this is an area where further effort is needed to be successful. Finally, we take note of the authorities' plan to seek a new arrangement after the current one expires next year. If such agreement materializes, the focus should be on continued steady fiscal consolidation, based on planned ambitious structural reforms in the public sector, for example, in the healthcare sector or tax administration, also on growth-enhancing structural reforms, most importantly in the labor market, and privatization in reforms that can improve the business environment. So to give the bottom line, we had a successful mission here. A lot remains to be done, and we are convinced that the authorities are fully committed to complete the necessary steps and move forward. Thank you very much.
Cadrul macroeconomic în ansamblu sau se menține conform celor anticipate în cursul ultimei noastre vizite și deci nu am adus modificări majore proiecțiilor noastre. Ca și mai înainte, apreciem că spre sfârșitul acestui an creșterea va începe să își revină, situându-se la un nivel de minus 12% în 2010, înainte de a ajunge la aproximativ 1,5% în anul viitor. Inflația a urmat în mare traiectoria pe care o proiectase, dar presiunile generate de prețurile la alimente se acumulează, ceea ce ar putea împinge de acum încolo indice prețurilor de consum peste nivelul anticipat. Acesta revenind însă în interiorul intervalului țintit spre sfârșitul anului 2011. Pe frontul fiscal avem unele rezultate încurajatoare. Eforturile extraordinare făcute de autorități pentru a pune ordine în domeniul fiscal își arată roadele. Țintele stabilite pentru finele lunii septembrie au fost atinse cu o marjă amplă și suntem pe drumul cel bun în a atinge țintă de deficit la nivelul întregului an. Am să repet ceea ce am spus și data trecută. Am fost impresionați de determinarea autorităților de a efectua ajustările necesare în condiții economice și sociale foarte dificile. Ajustarea nu a fost impusă de femei. Ea a devenit necesară din cauza situației economice și financiare cu care se confruntă România în contextul celei mai dure crize mondiale din ultimii 60 de ani. Autoritățile au trebuit să ia unele decizii dure și noi am susținut aceste decizii, care au creat premisele de stabilitate și creștere pentru viitor. Pentru a stimula creșterea economică, am agreat cu autoritățile alocarea de resurse suplimentare pentru investiții în prima jumătate a anului 2011, astfel încât să accelerăm absorpția fondurilor europene. Dacă la sfârșitul primului semestru gradul de absorpție va crește, vom discuta măsuri în vederea suplimentării fondurilor pentru investiții. În același timp, ne-am confruntat cu unele provocări, dar am ajuns la un acord cu privire la modul în care să le soluționăm. Prima provocare a fost cea legată de arierarte. În pofida plății unei sume semnificative pentru arierate la sfârșitul lui septembrie, continuă să se mențină presiuni pe parte de cheltuieli, mai ales în sectorul sănătate, presiuni ce riscă conducă la arierate noi în viitor. Am convenit cu guvernul asupra unui număr de pași suplimentari care să prevină o astfel de situație. Unul este acela de a asigura corespondența dintre alocarea bugetară și obiectivele de cheltuieli ale guvernului, astfel încât să nu se mai acumuleze arierate. Altul este o listă cumprinzătoare de măsuri de reformă a sectorului sănătate, menite să sporească veniturile acestui sector, să reducă cheltuielile și să conducă la un mai bun control asupra serviciilor contractate. A doua provocare a fost aceea de a încerca să soluționăm incertitudinile legate de structura ajustare fiscale pentru perioada următoare. Autoritățile se angajează în continuare total să realizeze țintele de deficit stabilite pentru 2011 și 2012. Dar contestarea juridică și politică a unora dintre politicile de ajustare au creat incertitudini și au impus recalibrarea semnificativă și frecventă a politicilor fiscale. Spre exemplu, modificările arbitrare referitoare la TVA și impozitarea pensiilor, presiunile constante de modificare a politicii salariale și acelei fiscale și contestarea arbitrară în justiția a managementului economic rațional continua să pericleteze cu regularitate procesul de elaborare a politicilor economice. Sunt sigur că guvernul va ajusta măsurile sale de politici astfel încât să poată realiza obiectivele fiscale convenite. Dar trebuie să menționez că aceste incertitudini politice și juridice subnemează stabilitatea și afectează creșterea. A treia preocupare a fost aceea de a continua derularea programului de reforme structurale. Pentru că acest program se apropie de final, trebuie să ne asigurăm că sunt instituite măsurile convenite pentru a se garanta stabilitatea fiscală și o mai bună creștere economică în viitor. Dintre acțiunile importante rămase, ne așteptam că reforma pensiilor să fie promulgată curând. Am ajuns la un acord final în ceea ce privește reforma comprehensivă a sistemului de salarizare în sectorul public, a doua rundă de așa numite lege a salarizării unitare. Și ne așteptăm ca aceasta să intre în vigoare înainte de noul an bugetar. Autoritățile își continuă totodată reformele în domeniul administrării fiscale cu un accent special pe persoanele fizice cu averi mari. În absorpția fondurilor europene, reformele în domeniul muncii și al asigurărilor sociale. În domeniul în care evoluțiile au constituit o dezamăgire, este cel ce ține de îmbunătățirea performanțelor întreprinderilor de stat. Multe dintre aceste încă înregistrează pierderi foarte mari și acumulează arieriate, existând puține perspective de remediere. Rezolvarea problemei întreprinderilor de stat va impune o abordare mai cuprinzătoare, care să includă reforma, privatizarea sau lichidarea acestora, pe care o vom discuta cu autoritățile în cursul negocierilor viitoare. Un ultim domeniu de interes al misiunii a fost reprezentant de sectorul financiar. Sectorul bancar continuă să facă față bine crizei economice, bancile menținându-se bine capitalizate și lichide. Cu toate acestea, pierderile generate de împrumuturile neperformante vor continua să afecteze mult activitățile acestora pe mai departe și se impune o vigilență permanentă. Suntem la curent cu faptul că au existat unele practici bancare neclare sau chiar abuzive și din acest motiv susținem ferm eforturile autorităților de a transpune o protecție mai bună a beneficiarilor de împrumuturi de la nivel european în legislația română prin intermediul Ordinanței 50. Totuși, o mai bună protecție a consumatorilor trebuie să asigure în același timp și stabilitate sectorului bancar. Încurajăm autoritățile și Parlamentul să lucreze împreună, astfel încât Ordinanța 50 să respecte aceste două importante obiective. În al doilea rând, autoritatea de a încheta operațiunile de creditare ale băncilor ar trebui să aparțină exclusiv Banca Națională a României, nu Agenției de Protecție a Consumatorilor sau altui organism. În final, doresc să vă spun că am purtat discuții generale cu autoritățile despre posibile elemente ale unui nou acord succesor și am convenit că pe parcursul următoarei vizite pe care vom avea în ianuarie-februarie, vom purta negocieri complete cu privire la noul acord. Progresele mele în cunoașterea limbii romane sunt foarte lente, deci mă tem că voi fi nevoit să răspund întrebările dumneavoastră în limba engleză. Vă mulțumesc! Întrebări?
Paul Angelescu, ProTV. Pentru Comisia Europeană și Fondul Monetar Internațional, este modificarea Ordonanței 50 o precondiție într-una dintre scrisorile pe care guvernul le va trimite Comisiei Europene sau Fondului Monetar? Dacă nu modificăm această ordonanță, riscăm să nu mai primim următoarele tranșe de la Comisie sau Fondul Monetar?
If I could respond, we want to, as I said in my opening statement, preserve a balance between the very necessary improvements in consumer protection in the banking area, on the one hand, and on the other hand, we want to make sure that there is nothing that will endanger the stability of the banking system. Those are the two objectives. We have discussed this with government and with the parliament, and I'm optimistic that a resolution that respects both of those objectives will be found.
Let me just add that as the representative of the European Commission, one of our key roles is to make sure that European law is properly implemented in all countries. And one of the major aspects of European law is to protect consumers, particularly in this case in the financial sector. So we do understand and in fact stand behind the protection. At the same time, it is also crucial for me, who's someone who is responsible for this program in Romania, to make sure that the financial system is safe and continues to be safe and stable. So this is the fine balance we have to find here, and that's what we are working on together with the IMF.
Îmi cer scuze, nu mi-ați răspuns la întrebare. Este o precondiție modificarea Ordonanței 50 pentru primirea următoarelor tranșe de la Comisie sau Fondul Monetar Internațional sau nu?
We definitely want to assure that we have respected this fine balance that we talked about as part of going forward with our program.
For us, what is important is that at the end of the process, there is a solution that finds this fine balance and finds the right balance between the two. That's important, and that's an important step before we can move ahead.
Next question.
Andreea Gheorghe, Antena 3. Știu că în timpul negocierilor cu autoritățile de la București ați discutat și despre o reducere a cotei unice, despre o reducere a CASE-ului, o creștere a salariului minim. Vreau să știu la ce concluzie ați ajuns. Și a doua întrebare este legată de pilonul 2 de pensii. Ați discutat și despre o redirecționare a contribuției de 2% către bugetul de stat și dacă da, de asemenea, care sunt concluziile, care e decizia luată? Mulțumesc!
We discussed many different areas, you're correct. We have discussed the wage and salary policies, we have discussed pension policies in several different areas. So different areas were discussed. I think the conclusions are what we presented at the beginning in our opening presentations. For the full details, let me just say, it's not our job to micromanage the operations of the government. And so I think for those kinds of details, you'd probably be better off asking the government on that.
Dar care este... Iertați-mă, vreau o completare. Care este scenariul pe care îl agreați în momentul de față, pe care considerați că este cel mai bun în momentul de față pentru România? O reducere a cotei sau mai degrabă o reducere a contribuțiilor însoțită de o creștere a salariului minim?
As I mentioned in my opening comments, constant changes in the tax structure in Romania are not productive. And we strongly are encouraging the authorities to maintain some stability, having taken some very important steps back in June and July to improve revenues and cut expenditures. Our advice to the authorities is to maintain their policies without major changes, at least for the coming year or two, so as to give stability for businesses and consumers who need that stability in order to make their plans for investment and consumption in the future. So in general, we want some stability in the tax system and stability in expenditure policies going forward.
For us, one of the key to the success of Romania is to have a stable and well worked out medium-term fiscal strategy. In fact, as I mentioned in my opening statement, the approval of that strategy is one of the steps we agreed with the authorities they take before we go ahead. And an important, crucial part of this plan to spell out the strategy and the plans for the tax system, as well as on the expenditure side, and all the reforms that are necessary to get there. And this is an important step to encourage this stability. So thanks for talking about, which is absolutely crucial for us, and it's part of the new strategy for Europe in general, which we actually now recommend to all member states. Thanks.
I will ask in English, Andra Timu from Bloomberg. What are the prior actions that Romania must fulfill in order to receive the next disbursement from the IMF and the European Commission?
I think we've outlined in our opening statements the general areas where we want to see additional progress. For example, the approval of the second round of the Unified Wage Law and enactment of the pension reform once the Parliament has acted on the President's veto. Those are among the things. We also want to agree with the authorities and have approval of the 2011 budget for us to go forward. And we've decided with the authorities that because the budget is only going to be approved probably in late December, that we would go to our board in January to give them sufficient time to get the budget approved.
As you might have realized, we are working here together, three teams, so we are very well aligned. And the five major steps that I spelled out in my opening statements are the five most important steps to be taken for us to move ahead. There's one aspect where, you know, we take a longer term view or put more higher premium on that, and that's why I emphasize the medium term fiscal strategy, since our relationship with Romania is going to be a very long term relationship. And for us, the fiscal consolidation in Romania is part of the European general trend and task of fiscal consolidation. There are a number of countries. It's a major task, and we have to make sure that this is actually taking place in a coordinated manner in Europe so that policies in different countries support and help each other. Thanks.
O întrebare am, Adriana Duțu de la Canal D. Cum privește FMI-ul ideea unui TVA de 5% la alimentele de bază? Această lege se află acum pe masa președintelui Traian Băsescu și cu privire la un nou acord, ne puteți da și o sumă pe care autoritățile române vor să o împrumute?
If I can answer the second part of the question first, we have not discussed with the authorities a specific amount for the new program. That's a detail that we will work out with them in the future. With respect to your first, the first part of your question, okay, what was it again? The 5%. Yeah. As I said in my opening statement, these constant changes in tax policies are very difficult for the authorities to incorporate into a stable fiscal path. And so we are strongly advising that we do not make significant changes in the tax structure going forward. And that includes the 5% VAT that was recently passed, I'm told, by accident in the parliament. I think we had a question up here in front, maybe first, no? Okay, go ahead and then we'll get the microphone up to the front later.
Andrei Coșocaru, Realitatea TV. Președintele Traian Băsescu declara că ați fost chemați la Cotroceni pentru că guvernul a găsit un nou plan de măsuri pentru reducerea deficitului. Au fost noi măsuri care v-au fost prezentate și care sunt acestea, ne puteți spune? Mulțumesc.
Let me just say the following. We have a very active dialogue with the authorities, both at the level of the president, the level of the prime minister and his government. We discuss a lot of different options, and we did the same in our previous visits. I don't think it's constructive for our dialogue with the government to make public all the different options that we discussed but did not in the end decide to adopt. It's better for us to be able to have those discussions in private and then make public to you the conclusions. So yesterday we had some additional discussions about some additional options. What we presented to you in our opening remarks are the conclusions that we have jointly come to. In due course, as you well know, we will make public the letter of intention between the government and our organization. The EU will do the same. And then you will see exactly in all detail what has been agreed.
I would like to add one thing which I made in my opening statement, and I would like to reiterate. It is in our interest, and it is best interest of Romania, to make sure that all the money that is waiting for you in Brussels is actually used. That amount waiting for you in Brussels over the coming 3 years is actually comparable to the size of this international support package. The big difference is that this package is basically loans, so you have to repay it, and you have to repay it with interest. That money is waiting there for you as grant, so it's yours, and it's yours forever. So I think I completely share the president's and the prime minister's concern about making sure that this fund is used, which is part of what we call European Union, the family of European countries, that countries that need to reach the income level of the average are supported by those who are more fortunate and have more financial resources available. But this money should be used, and it should be used efficiently, because that's the underlying idea behind, you know, how the schemes are designed and run. And it also requires to make sure that you know what your priorities are, and then, as they say in English, put your money where your mouth is. So act according the priorities. And that's what we agreed and discussed in many places with the president, the prime minister, the finance minister, with everyone. And we stand ready to provide as much technical assistance, as much support as necessary. We are working side by side, the IMF and the World Bank, to provide expertise. They have in certain areas outstanding expertise, like local governments, where we do not have. So this is a joint effort, but the goal is to make sure that that money is well used, and it's used. Thanks.
Adrian Niclozan, The Money Channel. O întrebare pentru domnul Franks. Ați estimat că la finele acestui an vom asista la primele semne de revigorare economică. Aș dori să vă întreb, ținând cont și de prognoza dumneavoastră de creștere pentru 2011 de 1,5%, pe ce anume, pe ce elemente se bazează această prognoză și dacă e posibil să vedem semnele creșterii mai degrabă către jumătatea anului viitor sau către finele anului viitor. Mulțumesc.
Thank you. That's an excellent question. We have already seen signs of growth returning. Quarterly growth in the second quarter of this year was positive. We do expect that the growth in the third quarter was negative again for very specific reasons. But I think that there are indications in the economy that underlying patterns are beginning to turn. Let me just give you a few examples. The industrial output numbers and exports have been strongly positive, have been posting strongly positive growth rates for some period now. Even in an area like retail sales, where the trend has been negative, we've recently begun to see a turn in the indicators. We also expect that once the effects of the VAT increase and the wage cuts work their way through the system, we will have a return to higher consumption in the country. This is also linked to the fact that there's a broader economic recovery going on in Europe and in the rest of the world, which we expect also will have positive impacts on Romania. So as the world environment stabilizes and begins to grow, we also expect positive effects on Romania from outside. So I think those are the key elements that we see. I would anticipate that in the fourth quarter of this year that we're just in now, that we would see growth perhaps slightly positive, but you know, some margin of error there. But certainly by the first and second quarters of next year, we should start posting regularly some positive growth rates quarter on quarter. And by the end of 2011, those rates will become more robust, leading to even higher growth in 2012.
Agreeing with everything Sir Frank said, let me focus your attention on two aspects of the underlying macro story. One is the recovery in Europe, but not only in general, but the recovery of export, European export, which is in certain areas is very strong. And your export industry and manufacturing is feeding into this strong export growth. So that is a support which is very important for the recovery. And in this respect, I have to say that the achievements and the results of Romania are quite it's really good and something which I think earned respect for you. And if you compare your performance even during the period when, you know, export demand was hit hard, you did somewhat better than others. So I think that's a strength and something you want to build on. And then building on this strong export performance, obviously the next step in every recovery is investments. So a turnaround in investments is an important part of the recovery, and I think that is the important mechanism that underpins our growth forecast. And in this respect, again, I think it's very important that all those investments that can come in from different sources, including from Europe, including from FDI, this all should find its way into the Romanian economy. And that is why very important that your policies on wages, your policies on labor market reforms are all supporting this process. Thanks.
Next.
My name is Doru Ciraș. I'm journalist at Romania Libera. I have two questions. First of them, traditionally the Authority of National Protection of Consumers protect traditionally the rights of the consumer, not the National Bank. The National Bank is interested in stability. In this respect, how can you give me us some arguments why you want to, like the ANPC to go outside from the discussion and to remain only the National Bank, which is not directly interesting in the consumer rights? This was the first question. And the second, how can you explain that Romania in this year is one of the three European countries which had the economic slowdown, the only one from the three European countries? What makes it particularly in this economic group of slowing down the economy? Thank you.
Okay. On your first question, we had a meeting in this mission with the Consumer Protection Agency, and I will repeat to you what I told them. We very strongly support consumer protection in all fields, including in the financial sector. Consumer protection agencies all over the world play a vital role in protecting those who are unable to protect themselves because of lack of information or because of asymmetry of power vis-a-vis very powerful corporations. So we are very strongly in favor of consumer protection. We are also very strongly in favor of consumer protection specifically in the financial sector. And it is perfectly appropriate for the Consumer Protection Agency to have powers to deal with abusive practices in the banking system. However, around the world, the ability to close lending activities or to stop banks from lending in certain areas or generally is reserved for the financial supervisors who in Romania are located in the National Bank. Financial sector activity is a very specialized activity. It's not just like selling another product. And as a result, you need highly specialized people to supervise this activity and to make the judgments about suspending lending activity in banks. And this expertise is in the National Bank. Now, I would hope that the Consumer Protection Agency and the National Bank would work very closely together on issues of consumer protection in the financial industry to protect consumers from abusive practices. But the specific authority to shut down lending activities is one that all over the world resides with financial supervisors, not with other agencies. On your second question about how do we explain that Romania continues to be an economic slowdown, let me just note that it's not just Romania. True, there are not as so many countries in the EU, but if you look in the neighborhood here, you'll find that this region is still very sharply affected by the downturn. And it is turning around a little bit more slowly than other areas in Europe. I'm speaking of not just Romania, but Serbia, Croatia, Bulgaria, of course, Greece, which has very serious problems right now. So it's not a Romania-specific problem. The second answer that I would give to you is that how well countries have come out of this crisis depends on two things. One is what condition they were in when they went into the crisis, how well their policies prepared them to absorb the crisis, and two, how well they've responded. Romania has taken very serious actions to respond to the crisis. But I have to say that the position that Romania was in going into the crisis was not as good as many other countries in Eastern Europe. You went into the crisis already with a very large fiscal deficit, very large imbalances in your current account. And these imbalances going into the crisis when times were good left you less able to cushion the blow when the crisis came. Other countries went into the crisis with a surplus in their budget. And so they were able to let their budget deficit grow without having to do so many cuts. So again, as I'll repeat what I said in my opening remarks, the cuts to control the budget deficit that were made in Romania are not the fault of the IMF or the European Union, and they're not the fault of the Romanian authorities. They are a necessary response to the fact that you didn't have room to have a larger deficit because you had too big a deficit when you went into the crisis. So this is, I think, my response on that point.
Let me again, since you were asking this question in the context of, you know, European the economy, and you are right that some of the economies are now pulling out, but you have to look into why those countries are pulling out. And there are two important aspects to this. One, which I would like to emphasize, good reforms prior to the crisis. Why Germany is so strong in the export sector and so competitive? Because they had major labor market reforms prior to the crisis. And if you look into the performance of Germany, it's particularly, particularly strong on unemployment. They actually by now have lower unemployment than before the crisis started. And one of the major reasons for this was strong structural reforms. So that is why we insist on that looking forward, if there is a continuation of our relationship, this should be in the very center. But let me emphasize another important aspect of this, which Mr. Franks already pointed out, and it's absolutely crucial. The lesson from this crisis for Europe, and I think this lesson applies to Romania, that if you have no institutions, no rules in place to make sure that when you have good times, you build up those cushions, you strengthen your fiscal position,
then when the crisis hits you, you are weak. And then, you know, the impact is so much bigger. Now, for a country like Romania, which still has very high risk premium, this impact is so much stronger. So I think these are the important lessons that are European lessons, but absolutely applicable and important for Romania. And I'm very glad that you asked this question in the European context, because I think within the European context, you see many of the good answers for you. And if you look out and watch out for those countries that took important reforms, or look at how the other countries are addressing the difficult situation, some of them are in much more difficult situation, because they not only have a fiscal problem, but they also have, many of them, major financial sector problems. Your big advantage is that you don't have that. Please make sure that you will not have in the future. But the second one needs to be addressed. And I think that's, again, a crucial element of any future, should be a crucial element of any future arrangements. Thank you very much.
Pentru reprezentantul Comisiei Europene, dacă s-a declanșat procedura de pre-infringement pentru Ordonanța 50 în cazul României și dacă România riscă declanșarea procedurii de infringement dacă această ordonanță nu este modificată? Prima întrebare. Și a doua întrebare despre salariile angajaților din BNR, CNVM și alte instituții care se autofinanțează, dacă s-a discutat acest lucru și la ce concluzie s-a ajuns în privința salariilor acestor angajați.
Thank you very much. On the first one, I think it's important to understand what is this infringement procedure. It's a legal procedure which is there to ensure that member states are in line with the European law, because this is the law of the land here, also in Romania, in every member state. Now, first, the European law has to be kind of implemented in the Romanian law. And that is not unusual for any country, that they implement somehow the European law and then we see some problem. And the procedure, just for you to understand how this procedure goes, you implement the law in a certain way, then people in charge of this in Brussels say, oh, we see a problem here. We are not quite sure that this is in line. So they send what is called a pre-infringement letter, which basically says that to the authorities that we see some problem, please explain to us so that we can have an informed view on what was actually done, because it's not so easy to understand all the details of a national legal system. So we are at this stage, this letter was sent, and then the next step is for the authorities to send back a letter and explain what was done and how that, you know, fits into the European and Romanian legislation. When we are through this process, then those people in charge of making the decision whether an infringement procedure is started can take an informed view and decide on that. We are not there yet, so we have to see how it goes. This is a process which is a dedicated process in certain parts of the Commission involving experts and lawyers, so it's for them to go through, and I'm sure that at the end of the day, this process will be properly concluded.
You launched the pre-infringement procedure. Yes or no? You sent a pre-infringement letter to the government?
My understanding is that such letter was sent.
And from your experience, you talked a lot and negotiated about Ordinance 50 this time around with the authorities. The way it looks now, if it's not changed, do we risk the infringement procedure or not? Well, I'm asking your expert opinion.
Correct. The very fact that a pre-infringement letter is sent means there is a risk. Otherwise, you know, these people wouldn't send the letter. So obviously, you know, they have some information which to them suggests that there may be a problem. So yes, indeed, there is such risk. But this is, for them, these are lawyers and experts in this particular area. And, you know, for us to have all these fine and delicate details of the legal system is somewhat a, you know, tall order. So I would not try to get into, also because it's their job, not mine. But indeed, the moment such letter is sent out means that they see a problem and they have a certain view on that, of course, given the information they have, which may change when they get more information. The same procedure was actually conducted when it came to the salaries of the National Bank of Romania employees. And my understanding, I talked to the person in charge of this, that this process came to an end, and as far as I understand, it's basically came to a solution. This is acceptable to both sides.
If I could just add one point on the second issue. We in the IMF don't have a view about what the appropriate level of salaries is for the National Bank. That's a decision for the National Bank. The concern was that there is a very strong emphasis in Europe, and particularly driven by the European Central Bank, that central banks need to have independent control of these issues. So the question is not how much you pay the central bank. The question is who decides. And the central bank here, as in many other countries, has a long tradition of independence that we think is a very important component of having a good independent monetary policy. So not a question of salaries, a question of independence.
Am o întrebare pentru domnul Jeffrey Franks, Ana Bâtcă de la evenimentul zilei. Ați spus faptul că în ianuarie, februarie, când veți veni în următoarea misiune, veți discuta cu autoritățile române despre companiile de stat care generează arierate și creează probleme în economie. Aș dori să ne spuneți mai multe detalii despre acest subiect. Spuneați că soluțiile pot ajunge la privatizare și chiar închidere. Privatizarea în această perioadă poate aduce prea puțin bani la buget, iar închiderea poate genera turbulențe în economie. Aș dori să-mi spuneți mai multe despre ce s-a discutat și ce intenționați în acest domeniu.
As I said in my opening remarks, we have not discussed details. What I said in my opening remarks is that when you have an enterprise that has serious difficulties and is losing money, you can think of in general, three different options. One is to restructure the enterprise so that it no longer has these problems. Another is to sell the enterprise so somebody else can fix it in the private sector and it doesn't cost the public so much money. And the third is, sometimes when enterprises do not function, they go bankrupt, they're closed. This happens all over the world to both public and private enterprises. I am not in a position to judge which of these three solutions is appropriate in any specific case. We haven't gotten into those details with the authorities, and even if we did, I'm not an expert on public enterprises, so I would not be in a position to make that judgment. The Ministry of Transport, the Ministry of Economy, and the other relevant authorities are the ones who need to have experts analyzing these enterprises and finding out what can be done to resolve the issue. What I want to be clear about is it is not sustainable to have public enterprises that year after year after year costs the public money because they are not able to cover their own operating expenses. That's not something that is sustainable. And it's been even worse in Romania, that these firms are not only losing money, but they're also just not paying their bills because they have such a large gap between the revenues and expenditures that even the subsidies provided by the state are insufficient. So this is the fundamental question. How do we fix this problem so that these enterprises are not a constant drain on the public resources, which are already very constrained? And how can we turn these enterprises from a drain on the economy into a source of future growth? Because if you want to have an economy that grows very strongly, you have to have good roads, good railways, good electrical systems, good heating systems. All of these areas are absolutely crucial, not just in and of themselves, but because they provide inputs into all the other industries in the economy. So these public enterprises are important on several levels, and this is what we're looking at in the future. We're not going to dictate what the solutions are to the authorities. We're not experts in this area, but we will discuss with them when we come back in 3 months what they and experts that may be provided by the Europeans or by the World Bank or by other private enterprises could give them on how to solve these problems.
Let me just add one aspect, which I think is very important when we come to some of these companies which are providing vital, you know, services to people. They cannot cover their costs. What does that mean? It means that the taxpayers pay for those services. So what happens is that the users of those services basically get a subsidy from the government. Why this is a problem? It is a problem because you have very limited fiscal resources And you have to make sure that those fiscal resources are used to support those who are the most needy in society. So it comes back to the issue of setting the priorities and using budgetary funds according to the priorities. When there is a state-owned company which gets, you know, transfer and support from the government year after year during a period, you basically don't even know who subsidizes whom and for what reason. So that basically makes it almost impossible to establish those priorities. And without priorities, it will not be possible to service those who need the service, support those who need the support, but at the same time keep fiscal discipline. So it comes back to the very issue of how can we conduct a fiscal consolidation which actually helps and not hurts.
Lidia Moise, Televiziunea Română. Domnule Franks, aș vrea să vă întreb care este, în esență, volumul arieratelor, dacă aveți dimensiunea acestora, atât a celor ale diverselor bugete ale statului, cât și ale celor ale companiilor de stat, ca procent din produsul intern brut. Este prima mea întrebare. A doua întrebare este adresată într-o mare măsură Băncii Mondiale, și anume, am înțeles că va fi nevoie de o reformă extrem de profundă în sănătate, în domeniul sănătății, și dacă gândiți un împrumut de susținere masiv, serios, pentru care să fie direcționat exact pentru rezolvarea acestei probleme, aș adăuga și dacă punem la cale reforma sau lichidăm, să zicem așa, problema companiilor cu mari datorii față de stat, dacă Banca Mondială este din nou pregătită să susțină financiar, de exemplu, închiderea minelor, așa cum a mai făcut odată, un program de tipul acelui care a mai fost odată pentru ca să nu existe, dacă vreți, probleme sociale. Și aș mai avea o întrebare, dacă ați, sau să comentați puțin sugestia rostită de președintele României de a scoate deficitul bugetului de pensii din să zicem, din the big picture a deficitului general bugetar. Și, domnule Franks, de ce este atât de inflexibilă această limită de deficit de 4,4%? Și o ultimă întrebare, îmi pare rău, aș vrea să-mi explicați de ce trebuie ca salariile de la CNVM și de la celelalte instituții să rămână ridicate atâta vreme cât ele sunt plătite din taxe și dumneavoastră spuneați, Banca Mondială cel puțin spunea chestia asta, că aveam o problemă de parafiscalitate exagerată în România, deci foarte multe taxe care parazitează activitatea economică.
Thank you. I'll start with your first question and then turn it over to my colleague from the World Bank for your second question, and then we can come back, both of us, on these. On the question of arrears, at the beginning of this program, we set in the IMF a target on general government arrears, and that means arrears in the central government, the social security sector, and local governments. The objective there was to try to bring arrears down to zero. And we defined arrears as payments that were more than 90 days overdue. So it gives the government 90 days to pay, and after that it's counted as an arrear. Eventually, according to European standards, you have to move that from 90 days to 30 days to pay much more quickly. But for now, we've defined this as 90 days. Why did we put a target on arrears? We put a target on arrears because not paying your bills is very damaging. It means that the real deficit in terms of what you've actually spent is higher than we measure in cash terms, because there's spending out there that you just haven't paid for, and so the deficit is larger. We want to keep that under control. A second reason is because when the public sector doesn't pay its bills, that has a multiplier effect through the economy. If the government doesn't pay one supplier, then that supplier can't pay his wages or his suppliers, and those enterprises can't pay their suppliers, and it goes in a big cycle. Now, this is also true of public enterprises, but I'll be honest with you, at the beginning of the program, we didn't even have good data on the arrears in some public enterprises. There was not a system set up to compile this information from the different enterprises. One achievement of this program is that we have now set up a system with the Ministry of Finance and the line ministries to measure the arrears in the largest loss-making enterprises. And actually, our colleagues in the European Commission have set a target, which we call an indicative target, to try to put some objectives for reducing those arrears. In terms of the size of arrears, to give you a sense of the order of magnitude, a little after mid-year, before we went into our last disbursement, the arrears of the general government were on the order of 2 billion lei, of which one part was general government and one part was central government and social security, and the other part was local government. We asked the government to pay down their part, their central government part of that, to near zero and maintain it that way for the rest of the program. And that's what they've committed to do. But we have not asked the local governments to do the same yet, because there are still problems with financial controls in the local governments that will only be dealt with in the new law that comes into effect in 2011. So we're kind of postponing that issue temporarily, although we still want them to do as much as they can on arrears. So I don't know the latest data, but I would guess that general government arrears now are probably much around the order of 1 billion lei. To give you a comparison, and I don't have the actual numbers in front of me, but roughly, the arrears in the 10 largest loss-making enterprises that we monitor are on the order of 7 billion lei. So this is a really large problem by comparison with the problem in the government. Now, some of those arrears of the public enterprises are to the government. So, you know, it's like the government owing itself money, so you might want to net those out. But it still illustrates the magnitude of the problem that we're dealing with and why it's such an important issue for us to address. I don't know if you want to say something on that, or I turn it over to you.
Yes, please.
Okay. So I'll turn it over to my colleague from the World Bank to discuss the health reforms.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for your question. I think the question is, we cannot provide a short answer, first of all. I think let me try to answer your question immediately what it matters. I think basically, as Mr. Franks has already said, there's a problem of arrears buildup. Now, that is a problem of incomplete reforms in the health sector. As you know, we have been discussing with the government certain improvements on drugs, hospital, co-payment. These are still being discussed. And as you know, there is a law which will be approved, we hope, by early next year. This is very important to improve the efficiency of healthcare services in this country. We do not think it's just a matter of adjusting the expenditures or providing more resources. We really think there are some efficiency issues in the delivery of healthcare services. We will be having a technical mission on this issue, which will be visiting Romania next week, and they will be discussing a full-fledged program of results-based financing, and it is a large program, and we hope to be able to address this problem more comprehensively. And we expect that this will not only solve the problem of providing better healthcare, but also address the issue of arrears buildup.
Thank you.
Let me just add one important kind of aspect to this issue of arrears. If a company provides a service to a state-owned company or a healthcare provider or a government, and they know that there is a risk that they will not be paid on time, or they will, you know, it will take a long time. Of course, what they do, they calculate, you know, they factor the cost of this into. And every research I'm aware of, and that's not the only country where we have arrears, we have a large number of countries where we have arrears. Every research suggests that the cost that they use, the kind of interest rate, implicit interest rate, is way above the cost of financing government deficit, way above. So it's a very expensive way of financing government, or very expensive way of, at the end of the day, financing government for state-owned enterprises, which later on will have to get support from the government. So one way of reducing budget deficit and fiscal consolidation in this country, an important way would be to do away with this because it's very expensive. So again, you will have resources that are freed up for important purposes. And I think that's the, one of the reasons why we are so determined to address this problem, this program and the next program, and it will be a long process.
If I could very briefly address some of your other questions, and then I think we only have time for about one more question after that. You raised the issue of taking the pension deficit out of the overall deficit measurement. There is a discussion at a European level about how you treat the second pillar of a pension system. And I don't want to get into the technical details of why there's a discussion about this, but I think that's what you're referring to. More generally speaking, when we're talking about the public pension pillars, in good practice throughout the world is to measure your government deficit at the broadest possible level, including not just the central government, but also social security institutions, also local government entities and state or district level entities, and in most cases, for the broadest possible coverage, to include the losses and profits of public enterprises. So broader measurement of the deficit is always better because otherwise you have elements of that are out of control that potentially could become a source of problems. And we have seen that happen in Romania. So we want to have as broad a possible a measure as possible. The specific issues of the Pillar 2, I think, are best left for a more technical discussion after the press conference. You asked why are we so inflexible on the ceiling for the deficit? I would say we are not inflexible on the ceiling of the deficit. Here's the problem. The size of the deficit that you can have in Romania is limited by the amount of money that other people are willing to loan you to pay for that deficit. And if the markets in the world are not willing to loan you additional money, you can't have a larger deficit because nobody will give you the money to pay for it. Just like if I in my home want to spend more money than I earn, I'll have to go to the bank and get them to loan me the difference. And if no bank will loan me the difference, I'm going to have to adjust my spending or my revenues. It happens at the same level of governments. And governments that don't do that run into very serious problems of financial crisis. So Romania is in a situation coming out of the worst world crisis for decades, in a position where there are limits to what they can borrow on international and local markets. And it's those limits that impose limits on the deficit, not anything arbitrarily that international institutions say to them. So you can have as big a deficit as you can pay for. But the size of the deficit that you can pay for is limited, and the desirability of continuing to run up debt is also a big issue. You should not want to run up additional debts because that's debts that will have to be paid by future generations. The final point here, why the independence of the wages and financial regulators, including the central bank. Let me correct one misperception here. These institutions do not depend upon taxpayer taxes in order to finance themselves. The central bank finances itself through its own operations. The financial regulators finance themselves by the fees that they levy on the participants in the financial markets. That's the first issue. The second issue is that good practices around the world suggest that these entities work best when they have independence from the government, when they're not subject to political pressures. And we have learned by very sad experience that this is the case because we've had a lot of problems in previous decades and previous crises in many countries. And so this is the key. It's not how much you pay these people. It's whether they have the independence to operate themselves free of political interference that is the key. If you want to add anything.
On financing deficit and why the deficit should be 4.4 or whatever number we put there. One important element which Mr. Franks pointed out is, you know, the market, how much they are willing to produce or provide you with. And why it is so that certain governments in Europe can easily finance for a certain period large deficits and others cannot. What makes the difference? And again, your capacity to finance a large fiscal deficit for a certain period is an important element of the flexibility, the room for maneuvering economic policy has in any country. So this is a tool which any policymaker would want to use in certain periods. And I think in the beginning of the crisis, together with the IMF and other organizations, we did actively advise governments to try to cushion the major impact of the crisis. That was part of the policy response. So it's not a devilish thing to have that in certain under certain circumstances and for a limited period. But what makes the difference between two countries in this respect, and if you look into our advice from the European Commission on this, we said for some countries, please go ahead and help not only your countries, but others as well with a strong fiscal stimulus, and others we said, please don't do this because that is not a good policy for you at this stage, were related to what sort of positions they were in, how credible their policies were, and credibility of fiscal policies earned in the first place by having a clear medium-term strategy to which the government is fully committed, so they know that if there is a large fiscal deficit to address a problem this period, there will be a correction the next period, and the debt level will be kept at a certain manageable level. And they trust the government that this will be done. The moment this is there, the market is willing to go very far. When it's not there, they're not willing to go one single step. And the problem is that for countries like Romania, which are still building up credibility in this area, and Romania is not the only one. In this region, actually, there are many of them. At the beginning, it's very difficult to know where precisely the limit is for you. So one should be very careful how far one goes, because coming back is so difficult. You know, consolidation is always very painful. So in this respect, our advice is that please focus on establishing a clear medium-term strategy that will help you in the future when the next situation comes and you do need fiscal policy to address the problem, that you have that policy tool there. That is the essence of many of the reforms that we spelled out as the key elements for the future. So if you are successful on that front, you will have much more room for maneuvering.
One last question, because we've already run over time, please.
Două întrebări legate de bugetul pentru anul viitor. Ați zis că ați discutat despre legea salarizării unice. Vreau să vă întreb la ce concluzie ați ajuns în privința salariului minim, de care știm că depinde toată salarizarea în sistem și multe alte cheltuieli publice, depind tot de salariul minim. Și în al doilea rând, în ce stadiu se află bugetul pentru anul viitor, pentru că știm că ar fi trebuit să fie deja în Parlament și cam cât mai când să ne așteptăm că el va fi finalizat ca să fie aprobat până la sfârșitul anului, pentru că este o condiție, așa cum ați zis, pentru următoarea tranșă. Mulțumesc.
Okay. On the unified wage law, the government very much wants to have a social dialogue with its social partners before coming to a final decision on the exact minimum wage. And we respect that. And so we've agreed with the government that after they have the discussion with their social partners, they'll have a discussion with us, and we will all come to an agreement on what the exact level will be. So that's a process that's going to be undergone. On the status of the budget, I think this question is probably best asked at the Ministry of Finance on what their calendar is for budget submission. We had very detailed discussions on budgetary issues, and it may well be that the government rightly wanted to have those discussions with us before submitting the budget to the Parliament. But we were assured by the Prime Minister that the budget would be submitted and that they were expecting approval by the end of December, as is programmed in the law. Okay, thank you very much for your participation in the press conference. It's always a pleasure to meet with you, and I hope that our discussion has been of use to you. Thank you.